Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we would like to pay respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents of children with disabilities. And this week's episode is with the Victorian of the Year!
Woohoo! This podcast contains truth, laughter and lots of F words, which is fine!
Yes!
But maybe you don't want your kids to hear, so yeah. You can pull back on it. You know, my kids, they're fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's up to you and your parenting style. Hi, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
We're out of lockdown, but I still feel weird.
Yep.
I don't know when that's going to end. Sorry for the rest of Australia, but it just feels weird.
It's weird. It's a weird time.
It is. It's just...
Last Saturday, I couldn't move all day. I just stayed on the couch and I just thought I should be out doing things and...
No, I haven't got the zest. The zest hasn't come back.
The zest. It's a good word. Anyway, we're okay. We're here.
Yeah, we're all right.
Yep. The kids have gone to school 3 days in a row because I haven't had, excuse my French, so early in. Fucking... Cup day holiday, grand final day holiday, curriculum day. We've gone back to school for 2 weeks and we've had fucking 3 days off. I'm sorry, this week, 3 days in a row, all three of them are gone. I feel like a new woman.
I feel like cup day should have been saved and given to us next year. Like, because we couldn't do anything. We couldn't
go
anywhere.
Also, grand final day, that was just stupid.
And grand final wasn't, I know.
Anyway, but anyway. All it meant was them home again.
I know, they were just home.
They've been home for 8 months.
Anyway,
enough about us.
Enough about us. Today, we are excited. We told you this was happening, Peas. So, for me, the best thing that happened from Australian of the Year was that we got to meet the actual Victorian of the Year and find out she's a P.
She is a P. So welcome. Introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, guys. So I'm Donna Stolzenberg, and yes, I am the current 2021 Victorian of the Year.
Yay! You were so well deserved, and we were so proud of you that night when they announced it.
We were going for you.
We were.
We were.
Yep.
We Thank all had you. Our people.
I was the same. I was going for you guys as well. I was saying to my husband, I hope these two win. Like, you know, of all the people, these guys are going to win. I think everyone was deserving. But because of what you do, and I have a child with a disability, you know, that really resonated with me. So I could really identify with your work and obviously the podcast. So I was so happy that you were also finalists.
And we really, not secretly, wanted a woman to win.
Kind of.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what we want.
Look at the history. I think it's something, just at a guess, I think it's something like 15 men and 6 women or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
History of Australian of the Year anyway.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're going to be cheering for you on the 20th of January.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Thank you.
At least you get to go to Canberra.
Hopefully.
Well, hopefully.
Hopefully everything should be open. I mean, Victoria's doing quite well, so We just won't say anything, though. We can't. We're just terrified of putting the moz on ourselves.
I won't say anything. You know, it might be buy another Zoom that cuts out.
We've already had a personal debrief about that, the three of us. We could do a podcast episode about that.
Oh, we could. Maybe in 3 or 4 years.
Maybe. Once Donna's won and she's out.
We'll tell you what
how we really feel.
I think if you watched it, you knew anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. I've got our first question for you, which is, do you have a song or a band or music that either pumps you up or gets you through the bad times?
Look, I listen to absolutely anything, and it doesn't matter what I'm listening to as long as it's loud. I'm one of these people that likes my music louder than my teenagers do.
Yep.
So I'm the one that gets told to turn it down and put the headphones on, and, you know, I've pretty much blown out my own eardrums. But, you know, anything from sad songs like current or indie rock. I mean, I'm a huge fan. I'm 52, so I'm a huge fan of, like, the Bee Gees. You know, I grew up
on the
And, you know, old bands like Smokey and, you know, all the 70s stuff that I grew up listening to. My mum and dad were huge fans of John Denver. So
Rocky Mountain High, baby.
And all of those things. Exactly. And I actually went to the Rocky Mountains in honour of my dad because he loved that song so much. So after he passed away, I travelled there. And I bought a rock home for my mum.
Just different mountains over there,
I've been there too. It's a different landscape.
Which
sounds an obvious thing to say, but it's beautiful.
Well, Australia has hills. We call them mountains, and they're mountains to us.
Yeah.
But I remember when my aunt actually was from Colorado, and she came and she saw the mountains. So I grew up in the Yarra Valley, so she saw the mountains near Warburton, and she goes, "They're lovely foothills. Is there fog in front of the mountains?"
Where are your actual mountains?
That's our mountains.
We're really proud of it.
Yeah. Mount Donabuang.
Oh.
Anyway, we digress, of course. That's what we
do. Okay, what about, did you win any awards at school? And then you can talk about this award a bit later.
Yeah.
I won two things at school. One was not an award. I got third prize in the Easter raffle.
So right. That's a good one.
I had to wait till I was at uni to win that one, though, but it was nice. I finally won something in an educational institution, so I was proud of myself there. But I used to win actually a lot of math awards. I was very good at maths at school. So I won some state maths awards, and also I can't remember what the award was called, but there was a state English award for poetry, and I won that one year. Wow. I was in year 8, I think, when I won that one.
I remember those awards that you used to be able to do. Yeah, I never won any.
No.
But I was aware of them.
Do you still write poetry?
I don't write poetry as much, but I write a lot. So I write for the charity. I write the stories of the women that we're supporting, and so I always do a lot of writing. But I don't actually write much poetry anymore now. Yeah, it was something I loved when I was a teenager. You know, very emotive and very emo.
Surely you could write one about the Zoom, Australian of the Year.
Oh, look,
you know, I pressed play on the Zoom and then it cut out.
Yeah. Play on the Zoom, it went black in the room. Yeah. I was very good at rhyming.
Well, I think it's begging to be written.
Yeah, maybe you can write like an indie rap.
Well, what is a rap? Yeah, I'll turn it into a musical. The haiku. Like Hamilton.
The Strain of the Year, the musical.
Well,
look, nothing's impossible. That's all I'll say.
It needs to be done.
It does need to be done.
Goodness.
Oh, dear. Okay. And why are you a P?
I am a P because I have two children who – I have 5 sons, first of all, and I have 2 children who are on the autism spectrum. My 14-year-old son has high-functioning autism, and my 12-year-old son has I can never remember which way the levels go. You'd think I would remember. My little guy has autism that he's quite severely impacted by.
So the levels go up. So like one is high function. We don't, I don't know. So he's level three. High functioning, level three. Level three. Yeah.
He's level three. And he also has an intellectual disability as well. And we have some amazing times with him. So we also have some very difficult times. It's not easy to fight for the rights of your child. The services are not always there. You have to advocate for things that they really should be entitled to as a given. Yep. And you kind of get, you know, you get fatigue. You really get fatigue. And you've got to write some, oh, can you put that in writing? Can you put that in writing? Oh, you know, he's going into high school next year. We need to do all of his tests again. Oh, he's still has autism, he still has an intellectual disability, you know, but they make you jump through hoops that you don't have any energy to jump through because you're caring for a child with a disability.
Yes. Oh, so true.
Yeah. Hooray.
So true. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's no support offered. They don't jump through any. No one's going to jump through a hoop for you.
No, that they aren't. And they don't understand the extra work they put you through, especially when they lose documents. Oh, look, we can't find it on file. Could you write it out again?
No.
Could you get your psychologist to sign it again? Oh, you'll have to or you won't get NDIS.
I know. And then you're like, well, my psychologist is, her daughter's just had a baby, so she's taken 2 weeks off. And you're like, no, not now. And then you're feeling really bad. She's like, well, I've got their number that they said I could call in emergencies. Oh, it just puts you in this position of
guilt.
Constantly.
So much guilt.
Yeah, and begging people to do things.
Yeah. So are these two guys your youngest out of your five?
They are, yeah, they're my youngest. My youngest child was diagnosed first. I worked with children with autism for about 6 years.
Right.
Worked with children on the spectrum when I was studying psychology at Murdoch University in Western Australia. And so I recognised autism. And I recognise it in young children, but I didn't see the higher functioning.
Yeah.
And I get that people are going to be upset with some terminology that I use, but these are terms that in my family were used to. So I apologise in advance. But especially when I have two children who are so different with their autism as well. What used to be called Asperger's syndrome, that's what my 14-year-old has or had. It was reclassified.
Yep.
And he was actually diagnosed after his younger brother was diagnosed because when Jay, my youngest, was diagnosed, I then started to look at my other son and go, oh, hang on a second. Yeah. I see some similarities here. And I didn't realise that I was walking on eggshells to stop the meltdowns automatically little things like I was making sure the plate went in the right spot and making sure it's the right colored plate and making sure that, you know, he had the certain cup and everything. There was that routine and I didn't realize that I had gradually put this routine in place.
Yeah.
And that if that routine was broken, well, he didn't cope very well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So my youngest was diagnosed first. He was very obviously on the autism spectrum. I picked it up when he was 14 months old.
Right.
It was so obvious. We had the regression, first of all.
Right.
So at that age, he had about 5 or 6 words, but then he lost all of his words. He lost his eye contact, no more pointing, no engagement whatsoever. He'd walk around the house just banging his head on the walls and repeating over and over just one sound.
Mm.
And we knew, and he was my fifth son. So And I was a foster parent as well for a few years, so I had other children to compare him to, nieces and nephews, so I could see the difference.
You
know, that this little guy needed some extra help, and we went and I'm probably just going off on the whole story now.
That's what it is.
we went and saw, he was under the care of a neonatologist since he was born because he was born prematurely and he was IUGR, which means
And how many weeks prem was he born?
5 weeks, but he was the size of a 32-weeker. He stopped growing at 32 weeks. So he was seeing a neonatologist, and it was our last appointment at the 18-month mark. And at that stage, I knew 100% that he had autism, but I didn't want to preempt it with the neonatologist and have him think that I was Mummy Google, you know, that I was just looking these things up. So all I said to him is, look, I think that Jay's got some, you know, I think he's a little bit delayed here. You know, it's my fifth son. I'm seeing him doing some things I've never seen other kids do before, but also not doing what I think he should be doing. So he did a check. And he said right then and there, he said he's tracking for about 9 months of age and he was 18 months. He said, we need to get him to a developmental pediatrician.
Yep.
He said, and we need to do it straight away. So he actually got me an appointment the next day. He
rang
himself and got me an appointment the very next day. And we saw the pediatrician, and his autism was that severe and the regression was that fast that she actually said to us that day, She said, the best news for you today is that your child has autism, because if he doesn't, what he does have will end up in the demise of this child. He will die.
Like a degenerative.
So, yeah, she said it's a degenerative brain condition because he's losing so fast. She said his rate of regression is so fast that it's either what they call severe autism or it's something that you need to prepare yourself for. So
how did you feel?
I look, in a way, I felt instantly like I needed to protect my husband.
Yeah.
Like, you know, oh, gosh, he's sitting here. How's he going to take it? Because in my heart I knew it was autism because I'd seen it. I'd worked with it.
Mm.
I had seen children regress. I had seen children so very much like my son that I wasn't that concerned that it was a degenerative condition. In the back of my mind I was. I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that. You know, we probably need to consider that.
Yes.
But they got him in for an MRI the next morning. That's how concerned they were. They were straight to the children's hospital for an MRI, and the results came back straight away. And they said, look, you know, he's fine. He's there are some areas of his brain that are underdeveloped, but there's no nothing degenerative happening there. It's like, he's okay. What you're dealing with is, they call it, it's a garden variety autism, but he is quite severe, so he needs a lot of help.
Mm.
And that was all done and dusted by the time he was 18 months old. So, diagnosed very young.
3 big days.
Yeah, very, very big days, yeah.
Oh.
And what did that mean then? What were the next steps for you?
So for me, I knew the importance of early intervention, and I knew that if we didn't get onto this quickly, that we were going to be wasting days. Now, as I say that, I'm very aware that a lot of parents will experience a high level of stress if they can't get their children into therapy straight away or can't get things straight away. And I don't want to cause that. I don't want to cause that anxiety in people. It isn't a case of, well, look, if your kid's not in therapy this week, that's it, they're doomed. They're never going
to
expect.
It's good to remember that.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it really is a case of, you know, go home, get used to the idea, speak to some people, and then start making some phone calls. But I guess because I knew I knew what treatments were needed. I knew what was out. I knew what used to be out there when I worked in that area. And the thing for me was I automatically knew that I did not want to be his therapist. I wanted to be his mum.
Mm.
So as much as I had done a lot of therapy, a lot of early intervention with children, I used to do ABA. I was an ABA therapist, applied behavioral analysis therapist. Yeah. And I had done a lot of that years before. I knew that that therapy wasn't going to be suitable for my son.
Yeah.
And I also knew that whatever we did do, I didn't want to be the one doing it. Yeah. I wanted to be his mother, not
his
therapist.
That's really amazing.
It's really profound.
Yep. And each to their own, because, you know, Mandy and I know people who went completely the other way and have, you know, renovated their house and got rid of rooms, so their therapy rooms. And but I really I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying
I really get it. I think it's, and it's nice to just be someone's mum.
Yeah.
That's what we wanted.
Exactly. And I had worked with so many families where I was the therapist, and I saw how much that eased the burden of the parents. And it was, back then, it was a case of affordability. And look, it largely still is.
Yeah.
So you're talking many, many years ago, and the only parents that, the only families that got therapy were those who had money.
Yeah.
And which was absolutely horrifying. It was terrible, but that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
And for every hour that I worked with a child, I could see their relief, and they'd ask me, look, can you do 2 more hours this week? Can we book you for 3 more hours this week? I'm just, and the parents would be so exhausted that for me to be able to do that therapy and for them to get that break and just do the parenting. Parenting's not easy.
It's
anyway.
Hard enough.
It's hard enough. You still got to do all the cooking and the cleaning and the washing and the bedtime and changing the nappies and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's
picnic.
Right. Yep.
Picking up the dog poo and like there's all sorts of things. And
exactly.
Whew, everything
exactly.
else.
And then all the therapy, which
I didn't do for a year. Got massive fines. You know, anyway,
but
that was an old story.
It's all that on
top
of this.
That's why my brain was absolutely chock-block full.
Yeah.
It is, and I knew what I could be in for if I didn't delegate some of this to somebody else.
Yeah.
And I also knew that the therapy that I was doing wasn't going to be suitable for Jay because he was too little. He was 18 months old.
Yes.
And, I know that people have their opinions about ABA, and I'm not going to get into that, but He was too little to do tabletop therapy. He was 18 months old. I couldn't expect him to sit there and do that. So I looked around for something else and we found another therapy that was great for him.
With the early intervention, who was that? How did you, was it a group of people? Was it one person?
Yep. So what we found was a model called the Early Start Denver model, which I believe is now quite, it's around a lot of different Melbourne places are doing it at the moment. But we were one of the pilot projects. So this project, this program, ESDM it's called, came out of the Mind Institute at UC Davis in California. And it was formulated, it would be at least about 30 years ago by a professor named Sally Rogers. And it's a play-based therapy. And so it's for children on the autism spectrum who the child leads the therapy. And then the therapist works within whatever it is that the child is actually wanting to do or play with.
That sounds beautiful.
And it was fantastic. And we were so lucky that Jay got a place at, it was the Autism Specific Early Learning Centre at La Trobe University. So it's a childcare centre and they've got two rooms dedicated to children on the spectrum and all the allied health are there. And the therapy is like from the time a child's there to the time they leave, they're working with them.
That sounds awesome.
Amazing.
There are cameras everywhere, so they're watching and they're watching the changes. And so many doctors and therapists and professors are involved in this therapy. So they're watching everything they're doing. They're tracking everything. And Jay went there for about 4 years, I think it was. And he started 2 days after his second birthday.
Right.
And the reason he didn't start any sooner was because it wasn't open. They opened 2 days after his second birthday.
Right.
I literally, the night that he was diagnosed, I'm not kidding, I sat up till 3 o'clock in the morning and I Googled and I sent emails and I heard about this place that was opening up at La Trobe Uni and I sent emails to everyone. I'm pretty sure I even emailed the builder. And I'm like,
can you have a specific entry?
Like, when is this place finishing? Who do I need to speak to? And I emailed everyone and these people would have woken up to these strange emails from this woman. I don't know what they thought, but I did get in touch with the right person and I had a chat to her and Jay was accepted into the program and he thrived there. He absolutely thrived and I'm so, so grateful that he got to spend all that time there before he went to school.
What a relief to find a place that was suitable. And
I know someone else who went through there and just so sad when they had to leave.
Yeah, I wanted to take the entire crew with us. To his school. You know, that was school scary.
Where did you look?
So we asked the so Jay had allied health, had private allied health the whole way through. So we still had our own psychologists and occupational therapists and speech pathologists. And we asked the psychologist, because she was very well versed in all of the schools. We knew that she worked in the schools and we checked a lot of different schools. And what we knew with Jay was that we didn't want to send him to an autism school. I know that sounds a little bit like, well, why wouldn't you? But he'd had all of this amazing early intervention. And what we found was that he was connecting with adults and not children, because the children that were there all were on the spectrum and largely weren't connecting with each other. So we needed him to be around children who didn't have autism, who would initiate play with him and who he could play with if he was initiating play. So we chose a special school. And so he goes to Jackson Special School in St. Albans. Mm. And it's absolutely wonderful. He's been there since prep. He's in grade six now.
Right.
And he's thriving there. He's now, he's 12 now and he's verbal now, so he does speak, which is just fantastic.
Yes.
And he's got the most amazing sense of humor.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, he's incredible. He's not fully conversant in that you can't have a conversation with him like a reciprocal conversation. If I say to him, you know, Jay, how are you? I won't get an answer back. But if I prompt him, then I'll get good, thanks. With conversation, he will come up and just say something that he knows is hilarious. Like they have assemblies, say, assemblies in the hall, and they don't have assemblies in the staff room, but he'll come up and look at me and go, assemblies are in the staff room. You're joking. Yeah, and he'll laugh fun. His head off and think it's hilarious. Like, I got her again. Every time I tell her that, she's, you know, she falls for it.
Yeah.
I remember when I was looking at the special school for my daughter and I saw all sorts of disabilities, children.
Mm. Yeah.
With a range of disabilities. And I thought, this is fantastic. It's not one particular specific disability. So I understand that too from my own, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's that diversity. I wanted him to experience diversity within a safe place. Exactly. And in his first year, he made friends with two little boys, and they both had Down syndrome and they both had the same name. It was just gorgeous. And he loved them both.
Yeah.
And they went through the first couple of years of schooling with him. And he started to make friends, and he talks about some of his friends as well. Now, so we know some of their names, and he can tell me who he sat next to. And
That's all we want. Friendship.
Exactly. On the school Christmas party, the very first one we went to, I was just a barrel of tears because I'm sitting there watching him he's doing his school song, but he kept looking at the little boy next to him and smiling at him and grabbing his hand. And I'm just like, this never happens. You know, he's smiling because he's so happy, and he's grabbing his friend's hand and smiling at him. And these were things we worked for 4 years to get him to do. He was just doing them naturally, for want of a better term. But he just started doing them, and it was, he's blossomed there. It's been absolutely fantastic.
My most favourite thing was the production at our special school. I just think no other schools, nothing's as good as those. What do you think?
Look, I have to be really, really honest here, and people are probably going to go, oh, how could you, how dare you? But Jay's my fifth son, so I'm a little bit over the whole.
No, I get it.
I'm a bit over the whole school concert thing, to be honest.
Yeah.
Totally.
It was beautiful production and everything was fantastic and the children were so cute and it was great and I was a barrel of tears. And but, you know, I'm going to be totally honest on this podcast. It was like, oh, another school concert. Great. And at that stage, like, I've had a few times, three kids in three different schools.
Yes.
Of the age difference, one's at high school, one's at primary school, one's at special school. So I'm running around to three different schools. So it's not that easy.
No. That is my story too.
It was a fantastic show, and the teachers and parents at Jackson School are probably going to be quite upset with me.
It was wonderful,
but oh my goodness, he's my fifth child.
I know.
School concert. It's the same with book week. Why?
We haven't had it yet. I've seen all these other schools do it. I'm like, don't put it in, please.
That's the best thing about being in high school.
No more book week. No more dress ups.
And also, football players are not book week. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, but for some kids.
Just don't do it then if it's such a hassle, or don't make kids dress up.
Yeah, it's too hard for some of them.
No, exactly. And book week and Christmas concerts are a little bit my,
I get it.
Tell us a little bit about being a foster carer too. I'm fascinated by this.
Mm.
Yeah, so I grew up with foster children in my home. Yeah. So my mum and dad were foster parents, and I got to have foster brothers and sisters, and I saw the outcomes of the children when they grew up. I kind of knew that there was a lack of foster carers, and that, you know, they were desperately needed. My husband and I had, I think at that stage, we had three kids when we first started fostering. I fell pregnant with my fourth, that's right, just when I was doing the training for fostering.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember we had these two little boys come in and stay with us, and they were absolutely gorgeous. They were 9 and 5 at the time. And they were with us right through the pregnancy with my fourth son. And they came to the hospital after he was born, and they were in the house with us when he came home. And so we had quite a few children come through. I actually had twins as well. So I was a mum of twins as well. I had foster twins in, and they came to me when they were 6 weeks old, but they were 6 weeks Premi.
Right. Oh. They were brand new.
So they were brand new babies, yeah. And they arrived with half an hour's notice.
Oh, so I got Donna. A
phone call, desperate phone call going, can you have twins? And I'm like, what? You know, like physically? And they went, no. Can you take some twins right now?
Wow.
And then I said, yeah, bring them in. They said, will they fit in your car? And I went, oh, I didn't think of that. And I'm like, no, we can get a seat at the back. That's fine. We'll get that done tomorrow.
Yeah.
So oh, half my an hour gosh. Later,
I had these two baby boys dropped off, and they arrived, I kid you not, with two bottles.
Yeah.
One each.
Yeah.
And enough formula for one feed.
Yeah.
And for one twin. And two matinee jackets. I didn't have any, no nappies. I had no clothes. I had nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
So I sent my husband straight down to the shop. Right, we need some formula. We need some nappies. We need some wipes. But because I had so many boys, I had clothes.
You had all the clothes.
Yes. I had all the clothes. And my my fourth son at that stage was, he was only 18 months old. So he still had his
baby
his cotton, his baby clothes and his little cradle and things like that. So these little guys came home and I had no history on them at all.
Oh,
they
my
were
goodness.
Just given to me and I didn't even know that they were prem. They told me they were 6 weeks old and I looked at them and I said, these babies were early, weren't they? And they went, oh, yeah, 6 weeks early,
oh,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, so they were newborn.
They were newborn, yeah. Oh. And I had no history on them, their health. I knew their names, that was all, and they were boys. That was
oh, my gosh. And
that's the nature of fostering, is that you're ready for a surprise.
Yeah.
and we got lots of surprises. We had the best time fostering. It was an amazing, amazing experience. I love to myth bust about fostering. Everyone says to me, look, I would love to do it, but I could never give them back, which is actually very insulting to say to a foster parent because you're assuming that I wouldn't love these children as much as you do because I could give them back.
Of course.
You make it about yourself. I'd love to, but I could. You know what it's like with having a child with a disability? I could never do what you do.
Yeah,
we do. Well, I didn't sign up for it, but I'm doing it okay. I'm not a martyr. I'm not a hero.
Yep.
But with fostering, it's the analogy that I use. It's like, say if your brother or sister had a car accident and they were in a coma and someone said, look, you're going to have to look after their children for them while they're in a coma. And your brother or sister was in a coma for 6 months. And the whole time the kids are like, where's mummy? Where's daddy?
Yeah.
I want to go home. And then your brother wakes up and says, oh, look, you know, Mandy, I'm feeling so much better now. I'm going to take the kids back. Could you look at him and go, sorry, I've grown to attach them. You can't have them.
Yes.
No, that's a great analogy.
That's an excellent analogy.
Yeah.
I just couldn't give them up. I'm sorry. I can't give them up, so you can't have them. Even though they want to go home with you, even though they love you, I'm attached to them. I want to keep them.
You
wouldn't do that to people. It's very much like you do fall in love with your foster children. You adore them. It's very much like a niece and nephew relationship.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, I understand.
You know, I've got lots of nieces and nephews. They've come and stayed with me for holidays and I used to babysit them when they were little, but I didn't cry every time I had to hand them back to their mum.
Yes, got it.
You know, I loved them and I had nieces and nephews who lived on the other side of the country where my brother and my sister and brother-in-law would move because of their job. I wasn't in a barrel of tears at the end of the driveway screaming for them to come back. It was like, you know, it's like realistically you love them, you do the best you can and then they move on. And when you get your foster child, the whole idea is reunification.
Yes, that's right.
What you're going for.
Yes.
And you know that from the start. And very few children are in the system because they're being abused. There's a big myth there. Oh, I couldn't send them back to their terrible parents.
Yeah.
Like most of these parents are absolutely amazing. They're just not coping.
That's right. Yeah.
They need supports in place.
Exactly.
They need to get the mum or dad support and they love their children and they're doing the best they can, but at the moment the family needs extra support.
Yes.
So that's where you come in.
Yes.
And these children love their mum and they love their dad and they want the visits and they want to go home.
Yes, they do.
You know, you do the best you can and you look after them while you've got them with you and the you know at the start. As soon as they leave, there's a car in your driveway dropping off a couple more, don't you worry. saying, you don't get much, you know, time to cry about it.
No.
and that might be twins that are preemie in 6 weeks.
Yeah, old. That's right. What a woman.
We had to stop fostering when I actually fell pregnant with Jay, with my youngest, because I got very sick by 14 weeks pregnant with him. And he was a twin and we lost that one very, very early on.
Yeah.
And I was also 40 at that time as well. Yeah. I had had gestational diabetes with my fourth son. I'd been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and this was a very precarious pregnancy, and I had to unfortunately give up fostering with the full intention that we were going to start fostering again when the baby was, you know, 1 or 2 years of age. But, of course, Jay was born very, very unwell, and he was quite a sick little guy. He had his digestive system was very immature as well. His bones hadn't grown properly, so his long bones were very, very short, and he needed a lot of support. And then by the time he was two, of course, he was in full-time therapy, and we just couldn't take on foster children because it wouldn't have been fair on the child, because we couldn't give them all of that attention that they deserve. So
that's absolutely okay. And it was time.
Yep. And someone else can do it now.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tell us when you started your first charity.
So my first charity started by accident. The whole thing started by accident. I always say, like, I'm an accidental charity lady. I kind of woke up and started a charity. I didn't know that that's what I was doing, but literally what happened. I was working for a very large government department, and being an Indigenous person, I was working with all of our Indigenous employees, and we had all gone to Sydney for a conference and brought all the employees in. And back then I used to have this funny thing called time. One of those things that, you know, it seems like a myth now, and I wonder, did I ever really have it? Was it really there? But I did have some, apparently. And I used to go for a run every morning. So I'd get up in the morning and go for a jog. And while I was at this conference, I was like, oh, I get up in the morning and go for a run. Anyway, I was running around Darling Harbour, and I came around a corner and I saw what I initially thought was a dead body on a park bench, because it was freezing cold. It was too cold to be alive out there. And this guy was dressed in just a pair of jeans and a very thin windsheet and nothing else, and he had his back to me and he looked like he'd frozen to death. And all I wanted to do, I realized then, he's breathing. I was stunned. I just stood there staring at him, and I thought, I could wake him up and just give him the keys to my hotel, and, like, I'm staying over here, go and have a hot shower, I'll meet you in the foyer. And then I thought, he's sleeping and it's freezing and he must be tired, and if I wake him up, he's going to know that he's cold. At the moment, he doesn't know, he's sleeping through it, and he might not want to shower, and he might not want to take me up on that offer. And then he could have been awake for 3 or 4 days and finally fell asleep with exhaustion. So I stood there looking at him and I ran off, and I never forgot it. And I just felt so bad that I could not help him. I didn't know what to do. And I came back to Melbourne, and I had been working for probably about 10 years, I think, at that point, working with people with complex barriers to employment. So I was working for Centrelink for a long time. Right. And I worked with long-term unemployed people. So I'd already started a page on Facebook called the Melbourne Homeless Support Group. group for people experiencing homelessness, funny enough.
Yep.
And I'd started that 12 months earlier. So what I did was I went onto that that page and I said, look, you know, this is what happened. I want to collect some blankets and sleeping bags for people in Melbourne. Any organisations that they're in need of them, I don't want to collect them if no one needs them. Yeah. Anyway, two organisations put their hand up and they said, we'd love them. So because I'm a bit of a talker and a little bit wordy, I started this page up and I'm like, okay, Blanket Melbourne, I want all these blankets for people on the street. And in 8 weeks, I got 3,500 blankets.
Aww.
And it was like, oh, my goodness, I blanketed Melbourne in all these blankets.
Aww.
And
wow.
And in that time, I learned that blankets are not good because blankets are meant for bedding inside. And imagine carrying a blanket around with you every day versus a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
You can't roll. They're not waterproof. They blow off, you know, they blow away.
Yeah.
A sleeping bag's much better. And while I was delivering these blankets and sleeping bags one night outside of Flinders Street Station, there was a woman there and she was sitting on the ground and she said to me, look, she said, have you got any tampons or like a pad or something? And I was like, I don't. But she goes, I've got my period. She goes, I can't move. Like she's sitting on the ground. She's bleeding. And I said, look, I'll go get you some. What do you want? So she told me what she wanted. I went across the road to one of the little woolly stores or something, got her what she wanted. I handed it to her. She burst into tears, like sobbing. And she said to me, she said, I've just been released from prison like yesterday. I have a visit tomorrow with my children. They're in foster care. And if I steal, I will go back into remand overnight if I get caught and won't see my children. And I just thought, oh my goodness, what is going on here? This poor woman, we're forcing her to steal tampons because she's got no money. She's got no other way of getting them. Either she steals them or she steals money to buy them or she asks a stranger or she just bleeds on the street. None of those options are appropriate.
No.
So I had a look around and I thought, I asked if anyone was doing anything. I checked with a few places. Are there support programs for menstruation, for women experiencing homelessness, hardship? No, nothing. So I started the Melbourne Period Project. Now, I'd had all the support from the people who donated all the blankets.
Yeah.
So I went to them and I said, look, I've got this other idea. I want to start Melbourne Period Project. Would you mind being a drop-off point? Everyone said yes. Next day, I woke up to no less than 400 messages from people from organisations.
People are good, you know.
Yes.
People are amazing. They are absolutely amazing. And that's how the Melbourne Period Project was born. And about probably 3 or 4 weeks after that, I had to make a very, very big decision. And that was, do I quit my job or quit my charity? Because my employer had found out about the charity and were not happy with it.
Right.
And they said to me that it was a conflict of interest,
which
was hilarious given that part of my extra hat role at work was that I looked after all of the charitable organizations within this, you know. So if you were donating your old phone or some toys or whatever, I was the one that rang up, you know, this particular charity, hey, the bin's full, do you want to come and pick it up? And we had six charities that they supported, but I had my own and they didn't like it, even though I did not do charitable work while I was at my place of work.
Of course not.
It happened after hours all the time.
Of course.
Or it was in my lunch break.
Yeah.
And I wasn't about to break any rules there. But they didn't like it and they said, you need to choose between the charity or your job. And I thought, back to that woman, and I thought, how could I tell the next one, I'm not allowed to do charity work. You'll just have to, I can't help you. So I quit that day. I just handed my resignation in and they let me go that afternoon. So I was out of there.
What power.
It was a big shock. And I just thought, well, I'm a raging hippie and I believe that the universe is sending me in the direction I need to go. And this is what I was meant to do. So I just went head first into the charity and then I started to realise, the children of the people we were supporting weren't getting any support. So I started the school project to make sure that the kids could not only get what they needed for school, but that they could also go to school camp and school swimming.
Yeah.
And, you know, my foster kids didn't even have so much as a hat at school.
Know.
They had to play in the shade all the time. They never went to school camp. They never went to swimming lessons.
Yes.
So now we support the children to have all those experiences because those experiences are what creates their memories.
Yeah.
That's right.
Adult.
Childhood memories.
Absolutely.
Childhood memories. If you grow up and you're a 26-year-old and you've not got one happy memory of being a kid, then you're on a very sad pathway.
Yep.
And I felt that we had a chance to create some positive memories for these children. And, you know, you remember going on school camp, you remember the bus ride and you sing the song.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about who threw up on the bus and who wet the bed and
yeah.
ghost stories and who snuck off to the kitchen and got
the weed to put the fire out.
That's yeah.
All the, they said all the girls go inside and then all the boys put the fire out.
Yeah.
Beach Earth, baby. I remember. See, that's funny. Yeah. Exactly. Everyone deserves that.
Yeah.
Those memories that we create for the kids, you know, that's what they talk about when they're older. And I wanted these children to have some memories like the other kids. Swimming lessons, if you don't go, you're shunted to the next classroom or you go along and you sit on the bleachers and watch
them. Yeah. Nah. Wrong.
Terrible.
So we provide. With the swimming pack, we provide their bathers or swimwear and their goggles and their towel and their bag. And for camp, we provide everything, the gumboots, the torch, the pyjamas, the sleeping bag, the shampoo, everything so the child can go on school camp and enjoy it.
There really is no such thing as free education, is there?
No.
We're deluding ourselves, absolutely deluding ourselves.
So is that a different arm or is that just under the period project? What is
it? So it's so the actual charity is National Homeless Collective.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's the one that has the ABN and everything
that
we do. That's right. It's a project under that. So the period project, sleeping bags for homelessness, the school project, the Carla space, which is our op shop. So we employ women experiencing homelessness. So 100% of all of the clothing that we sell becomes somebody's wage. Someone who's recently been released from prison or someone who is sleeping on the street or has just moved into transitional housing but can't afford furniture, things like that.
Yeah.
So, and the rest of the staff there are all volunteers. I'm a volunteer.
Yeah.
So the only people that get paid are the people who are experiencing hardship.
Yep.
And I just want to say, I know what people out there listening to this are going to be thinking. The first thing in their head is going to be, I've got some clothes I can donate. I'll donate my clothes. And I'm like, please don't.
Yeah.
Please don't do that. I need you to buy them.
Yes, right.
What happens is people donate clothes and then they go shop at Kmart or Target. I need you to shop with us. Clothing donations are fantastic, but only if someone's buying them.
Fascinating,
of course.
So please shop. You know, if you're donating clothes, that's amazing, but please shop with us as well.
Yes.
The donations, because people assume other people are buying. And it's not always the case. People think, oh, I've donated so someone can buy this, but they don't give a second thought to who that buyer is when they then go to Target or Kmart or Maya and buy their clothes. Like, no, we actually need you to shop with us as well. So
yes, that makes complete sense. It's obvious.
Yeah. It is obvious. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and does your head go straight there? Oh, clothes! I've got clothes to donate.
Yes, I'll donate it does. I remember the bushfires, Black Saturday.
Yeah,
I'm donating things and prams and all. You know,
whenever
there's a crisis, I'm like, right,
we'll donate things, and then it's like, no, we actually need your business. We need you to come and stay with us, and we need you to, you know, come to our cafe, our hotel, our pub, and we need you to spend money there. So I need you to spend money at the Carla space because. That money that you spend becomes somebody's wage and I can't pay people without you shopping there because we're not funded. We're an unfunded charity. We get no funding from the government and every cent we get is a donation.
It's hard or for, sale of clothing. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't remember the last weekend pre-COVID that we didn't spend doing a fundraiser barbecue or, you know, we're flipping sausages and we're making burgers and we're selling them to make up the shortfall for the wages for people. And we're doing this with all these children and with Jay and, you know, so my husband and I haven't spent a weekend together in goodness knows how long.
I bet you haven't.
So I'm at the shop and then he's at a barbecue or he's at the shop and I'm at a barbecue or,
a
you know,
team.
Something like that. So
it's
team, but we're an exhausted team.
Yeah,
so people can help us out by shopping at the car or we making a donation.
And you can make donations of actual money.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't
actual
want
money.
We don't want your old pajamas.
We want money.
You
want money.
Look, Mandy and I don't ask. We don't mind asking for money.
No, we're fine.
No, we're shameless. So we'll put all the links in the notes.
Well, especially when we know it's going to
You know, if all you peas that listen to this, so we probably get between 8 and 10,000 listens an episode and it gets up to like 20,000 by in a year or so. If you all give a dollar.
Imagine.
Imagine. Yeah, so come on.
That would, That would do so much good, honestly.
And maybe just write from the peas or something if they're,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so then we can know.
When you donate it, write from the peas and then Donna can see how much has come.
And see, people and can see now why we wanted you to win.
Yes, this is why we wanted you to win. Yeah, because it
actually creates more momentum for your charity.
Yes.
And you can help more people.
And we knew.
Manny and I were just getting a dinner at Government House.
That's right.
We don't need it.
We put our voice out every week, sometimes twice a week.
That's
so we really wanted.
People are sick of our voice, but
And the support from you ladies has been absolutely amazing. And, you know, I'd actually heard of your podcast before we met through the awards. So I hadn't listened.
You don't have time.
I
literally don't.
No, you don't. You're totally, it's fine.
You know what? I probably won't even listen to this one.
That's the irony of the pea mum.
That is the irony.
It's so bad. I've been on a couple of podcasts before and people are like, oh, you know, so what did you think of the final edit? And like, I'm so sorry, I haven't.
With more important stuff to do, and that's mine.
Like people go, what do you listen to it in your car? And I'm like, that's when I have my meetings.
Yes.
And also your loud music. Yeah.
Yeah, my loud music so I can get through the day. But so
how do you look after yourself? What do you do?
So I am very into meditation. I'm actually a meditation teacher as well. And I found meditation, look, you know, it's funny, I found it about 25 years ago and it got me through some very, very difficult times. And then I kind of let it go and didn't practice it much anymore. And then probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I started to get into it again. And I just, it's what saved me. It literally is what saved me after taking Jay to and from school for all of those years. I was diagnosed with PTSD from the trauma of all that.
Of course.
And it was a nightmare. I mean, I don't live anywhere near Latrobe. I am like 20, 30 kilometres away from there. And I had to make that trip backwards and forwards every day. And it's funny because my other son, his therapy was in the complete opposite
direction.
I go back and pick him up and have to like, you know. So basically I'm driving from Melton to Frankston and back every day.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Yeah, it was massive. And I was diagnosed with PTSD after Jay finished. And it was in the January that he was getting ready to go to school. And I remember saying to the psychologist, like, why now? It's all finished. Now, why am I falling apart? She said, it's called post-traumatic stress for a reason.
Yes, exactly.
This is why we go into the war-torn countries after the war is over, because that's when the people fall apart. She said, for the last 4 years, you've been on survival mode, you've been ready to run. High alert, ready to run.
Yes.
Now your body can break down. Yes. Now your brain can go, oh, my goodness, what just happened?
Wow.
And she said, that's why you're falling apart. Yes. I remember at one point going into the kitchen this is how bad it was. I remember going into the kitchen to make a sandwich and I forgot how.
Yeah.
And I stood there and I could not remember the first step to make a sandwich.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what do I do first? I don't know. I'll get a bread, a plate. I know that they're involved in this sandwich making thing, but I don't know which one comes first. No. And, you know, if you find yourself in that situation, you know, I urge anyone to go and get support.
Yes,
It is it is the after effect, just the product of what you've been through.
Yes. Yep.
There is treatment for it. So I went and saw a psychologist and I'm very pragmatic person. So once I knew what it was, oh, PTSD, okay, I'll go research that. Still saw her a few times, figured out how to help myself. Oh, meditation, that's very good for that.
Yes.
I need to do that. And so I started doing meditation quite often and I gained so much from it that I ended up training and doing my training, becoming a meditation teacher. So we're offering that at the Carla Space as well for people. And I know a lot of people out there go, I've tried meditation and I can't do it. That's like saying I tried to run a marathon one day and I couldn't, so therefore I never will be able to.
Yeah.
It's practice.
First of all, you have to understand what it is that you're doing. It's not like, you know, you're not meant to go completely blank and have absolutely nothing there. I mean, if you get to that point, that's great. But it's about living in the now, literally this second. What can you do now? You can't do anything tomorrow and you can't do anything yesterday. You can only do things now.
Yeah.
And that's what got me through. So I make time for meditation. That's how I look after myself.
Yeah.
I make sure that I have time to do that. But because I meditate so often, I said this to someone the other day and they nearly freaked out. I said, I can meditate in the car. And they're like, oh, my God, no, don't do that. No, that's not what meditation is. It's not about being completely blank. It's about shutting off, you know, we live our lives with worry and regret. We worry about the future and we regret the past.
Yes,
we do.
True.
We worry about tomorrow. We worry about next week. We regret yesterday. Oh, I could have made better decisions. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. We never live in the now, but literally the now is the only thing we ever have. Yeah. So meditation is about, okay, I will not worry about tomorrow. I will not regret yesterday. What am I doing right now? I'm sitting in my car. Oh, where am I going? I'm going here. What can I see? And then all of the other stuff just fades away.
Yeah.
All of the worry fades away. The regret fades away. When you learn to do that, you realize that worrying about something never helped you.
No,
no, it never has.
Being mindful and cautious. People go, oh, that's silly. You know, I have to worry about walking home alone at night. No, you don't worry about it. You're cautious and you're proactive.
Yeah, you do something about it. Yeah.
Yeah, you do something about it. You're not laying in bed at night worrying about walking home tomorrow night.
No.
You're going to be proactive about it. So
it's a lesson to us all. Yeah.
It is. My beautiful work boy, Kieran, who has worked with me, well, for 6 years, he's just finished medicine this year, so I don't think he's going to be working with me anymore. No more holidays times with me. But his dad actually passed away from a brain tumor 4 years ago, 5 years ago. But he taught me meditation. So once he got his brain tumor, he really realized how powerful living in the now was, you know.
Yep.
I haven't done it recently, but I should. But, yeah, it was just beautiful to be in the presence of someone that really had things that we would think about, well, he really needs to worry.
You know? Started saying things like that's a worry for another day, though.
I did.
Like,
yeah.
I started noticing you talking like that.
Yeah, I'm not. That's not future Kate.
Future
She's
Kate.
She's never let me down.
Yeah.
Never.
Future Kate.
I love her.
Yep. My husband uses that term all the time. He goes, that's future Glenn's problem.
Yeah.
You know, future
it's
Glenn
helpful,
can worry about that.
Isn't it?
So it is.
It really is. And you can only make your tomorrow better now.
Yeah.
What you do now will make your tomorrow better. You can't make tomorrow better tomorrow.
Mm.
What you do this very moment is what will make your future better.
Yeah.
So, yes, you are thinking about your actions now and how they will affect your future and how you can make a smoother pathway for yourself, but you can only do it now.
Yeah.
So worrying about it, people go, oh, that's silly, you know, you've got to plan things. Absolutely, but can only plan them now though, can't I?
Yeah.
I can't plan them tomorrow. The planning for you know, the next 5 years happens literally now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's when you understand that concept, you realize how important now is.
It's freeing.
I found actually having the twins and then everything that came along with them, I completely surrendered to motherhood, which sounds way more hippie and zen than I am. And then I did nothing bothered me. I was like, oh, well, that's it. This is it. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was sounds really weird, but I remember thinking, I wish other people could have this.
Yep.
They could just realize, whatever is going to happen today is going to happen. And I didn't worry about me time or getting my nails done or no, it's all gone. And I don't know, I found it really weirdly peaceful, even though there was chaos ensuing.
But that word surrender, that's the optimal word. You surrender to what is.
Yeah.
And you don't try and control it. And you just, with the charity, you know, if I tried to control this, this thing's a juggernaut.
Oh, yeah.
If I tried to control this thing, I would be, you know, in it, like a basket case.
Yeah.
I would be in big trouble. But I've just gone like, okay, whatever happens, happens. I will have to help the people I can help today.
Yeah.
The important things will get done today.
Yes. Yep.
And I will do what I can today.
Yeah.
And I surrender to what comes. I surrender to what I can do. I don't try and force things. If I'm good at something, I'll do it. If I'm not good at it, I'll delegate it. And, you know, living that surrendered lifestyle really is the key to having a much more peaceful life. You can't control anything. That's crazy.
No, you can't.
You can't control what the person next to you does at the supermarket or what the car next to you does on the highway. You can only control what you do and surrender to everything else. You know, you go with the flow. And so I know exactly what you mean, Kate, you know, surrendering to motherhood. I just didn't care if people would come over and my house wasn't clean or my toilet wasn't clean or whatever. It's like, well, clean it for me then.
You don't like it.
You know where the domestos is. There's a toilet brush in there. Go your hardest.
I feel like that so many times.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And if they're going to judge me for that, well, they're not really my friends.
No, right? They're not.
I would surrender them.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Go hang out in your own clean house with your own clean toilet, but I won't be there.
Yeah.
Now, you haven't said any many F words, but you said at the beginning you wanted to. And you wanted to talk about women saying whatever they want to say. So just say this to my mum.
Look, exactly. Look, Mandy's mum. Was it Matt yet? Look, I think it's, you know, we live in an era now where we realise that you've got to stop telling women what they can and can't fucking say.
Yes! Amen!
Seriously, there's a warning at the start of this podcast that there will be swearing. People look at me like, but you're a charity lady. You're meant to be all nice and not swear. Yeah. I swear a lot.
Yes.
I swear when it's suitable. I don't swear in front of my children.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to swear to me. I don't swear in front of them. Other houses are different. I don't care.
That's right.
I don't swear at a job interview. You know, there's time and place for it. But if you
radio
come into
interviews,
the car, no swearing. Radio interviews,
we never will.
No swearing.
No.
Exactly. But if you come into the Carla space and you spend more than 5 minutes with me, don't be shocked when I drop F-bombs everywhere.
No.
There are some words that I won't say, but, you know, some people say to me, oh, that's not very ladylike. I'm like, who are you to judge me for being a lady? Oh, what does a lady
what
do
does
these
that mean?
Days?
I do not like? Know what that means.
Ah, exactly. I'm just like, go away.
Yeah, go
so,
away.
You know, if you don't like it, you can move. You don't have to listen to me.
You but, really can. After you've given me money for my because I need more pads.
Yeah. Give me money so I can help people.
And then you won't have to hear me at all.
Exactly. And I've had to swear to save myself sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Life has just been, there have been some days, like going back to Jay, there have been some days that have been impossible. And, I mean impossible.
Yes.
I remember this one time a friend of mine rang me and, Jay was having a meltdown of mammoth proportions and he was screaming and screaming and screaming because he wanted to feed the cat.
Yep.
And he's like, I have to feed the cat. And he was just, you know, for like 2 hours, he'd been screaming. And my friend rang me and she's like, you know, what's going on? I'm like, oh, Sasha, he's having a meltdown because he wants to feed the cat. And she goes, Donna, just let him feed the cat. I said, Sasha, I don't have a cat.
And that is the impossibility.
Yes.
And when you see your therapist or pediatrician, they'll go, just remove any of those things. You're like, what? I don't have a cat.
I don't have a cat. You know what he wanted to do? He wanted to feed the neighbor's cat.
Right.
We didn't know them. Every time we drove past their house, there's a little black and white cat sitting on the doorstep. You're like, feed the cat. I'm like, I can't go knock on your door and say, excuse me, could my son feed it? They would think that I was absolutely
great. And you'd have to do it every day.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, if I did it once, it'd be, we'd have to do it all the time. And he was screaming and screaming.
Yeah.
And my friend Sasha, she's amazing. She knew me and she knew Jay and she's like wondering why are you putting yourself through this? Like, normally you come up with a solution like, Sasha, I don't know how to fucking cut.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to point out, and Mandy and I love our children, would never say bad things about them, right? Because you wouldn't say bad things about anyone you love. But there's actually realities and truths and sometimes it's impossible. Doesn't mean we want a different life. Doesn't mean we want our children to be different, but right now you can say, I just had an impossible day.
Yes.
And our impossible, it's actually really fucking impossible.
Yeah, sometimes.
It is really impossible.
Yes.
We did have a similar situation a few months before where he wanted to feed the fish. We didn't have any fish.
Yep.
So I said to my husband, I rang him at work, I said, don't come home without a fish, without fish in a fish bowl.
Yep.
You do not walk through this door without fish in a fish bowl.
See ya, bye.
Okay, so, sure. Pet barn, here I come.
Yeah, he didn't have to ask questions. He knew, right.
Yep.
So sorry, guys, got to go, got to get fish. They're like, I understand his work is amazing. So he left me, went and got fish, came home with fish in a fish bowl. And, you know, that one we could do. But someone then said to me, well, why don't you get a cat? And I said, well, what happens when he asks for a giraffe?
Man? Yes.
Exactly.
What happens
when
it's at the bottom of a lion or something?
Yeah.
I can't just keep giving in. We do have a cat now. We did end up getting a cat, but that was some years later. and he doesn't feed it.
No one feeds the pets. No.
It's up to me to feed the cat.
Oh.
But, you know, the same with people telling women what they can and can't say, you know, that's not very ladylike. I don't like it when people tell me how I should or shouldn't feel about what's happening. Our journeys are all individual. our journeys. We have individual children, individual competencies,
so
individual
true.
Coping mechanisms,
yep.
and individual support systems. We yep. have no family here in Victoria, none.
Yep.
And like our families live in Western Australia and New South Wales. We can't even visit them at the moment.
No.
But we've been here sort of left to deal with this on our own. Yeah. And some days are really, really hard. And people say, you know, oh, but I bet you wouldn't change it for the world. Yeah, I would. I would. I'd make it easier for my son.
Yes, exactly.
That's the difference.
I'd make it easier for him.
You would.
I would make things not so much a struggle so that he didn't have to scream for 2 hours because he couldn't explain to me what he wanted. We had the pod books and we had the talking machines and we had the iPads and we had everything. He couldn't tell me how he was feeling.
Yeah, they'll throw them.
I don't know how many we've broken. Yep. Oh, my goodness. But it's about you haven't walked that person's journey, and you can't tell people what they should or shouldn't think, feel or say. Everyone's journey is different.
And don't you feel that the gift of having a life like ours is that that judgment's gone?
Yes, absolutely. You drop all those fucks that you had to give, they're gone.
Yeah,
all gone.
And it's the greatest.
It just, you know, when your child's diagnosed, out the door goes all those fucks you gave to them. And you give no fucks about anything.
No.
It's like, well, this is my life. This is what I'm doing. I will concentrate on this little being that I've been blessed with and who's going to need a little bit of extra support. And you do meet the most incredible people.
That is the best part. Yeah.
It's amazing. I remember the grieving process when, you know, I knew that Jay had autism and I knew that. But it still didn't stop me grieving. And I remember that, and someone said to me, you're going to meet the most amazing people. And I'm like, well, I don't want to.
I don't want to meet them.
I don't want to meet those people.
Melanie talks a lot about that in her book special. I don't know if you've read that. You don't have time and you're a long way down the track.
But it's an awesome book.
But it's an awesome book about new diagnosis and not wanting to be in the club. And now she's like, I love the club. But it's just a really organic thing that she went through. And it's lovely.
This club has the most amazing people in it.
Oh, it does.
We have that shared experience of having children with disabilities, but we have that it's not just about the child, it's about the journey that we've taken, and you really do get to see how beautiful life is. It's the same, like, you know, you're talking about your friend who had the brain tumor and you look at life differently.
Mm.
You have like, I used to call it my vampire eyes. You ever see that movie Interview with a Vampire when he wakes up as a vampire, things look completely different.
Yes.
That's how I looked at life the day after Jay's diagnosis. It's like, wow, the world is different now.
Totally.
I look at it so differently.
Yep.
And I had to adjust to that. There was a huge adjustment.
Yes.
There was a grieving process. I don't want anyone to feel they can't grieve, that they can't not like this.
Yep.
Some people who are so far ahead of the journey will dismiss it. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You'll be okay. But you don't feel that at the time.
Yeah,
you don't dismiss
anyone's feelings.
No.
Yeah. It's really hard. But, you know, now, like, we have, you know, I started this charity because I knew that when Jake got older that there were not going to be many supports for him. And I knew that there are a lot of people on the spectrum on the streets because there wasn't anyone to advocate for them. And
I wanted
to
ask
to help
them. What is the percentage of people with disabilities?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a I mean, the main cause of homelessness is housing affordability or, you know, unaffordability. And the percentage of people with disabilities and mental health, I think it's somewhere around like 10 or 15%, which is a lot when you consider you're looking at least about 120,000 people at one time experiencing homelessness.
Mm.
And that it is a preventative.
Yes.
It's a preventive cohort. They don't have to be there, but they slip through the cracks and the support services are not there for them. And, you know, that's massive. When I had Jay when I was 40, and I knew when he was diagnosed with a disability that I was not going to outlive him.
Yep.
That I had to start thinking about, okay, what happens when I'm not here? Who will look after him?
Yes.
And I was appalled at what was out there, the services.
Yep.
And I thought, I can focus on helping my son, him, or I can focus on changing the system that will help everybody.
Yep.
Now, Jay's got 4 older brothers and they can help look after him when I'm gone. But those people on the street, they don't have anybody.
No.
So I felt like I can use my advocacy and my support to help many, many more people and still help Jay along the way.
Yes,
of course.
sort of bring everyone else in.
A question that I wanted to ask, this may be true or not true. So I have a brother who has had addiction for his whole adult life and has been in and out of jail. And I know that you can't go on parole unless you've got a fixed address, but he never has a fixed address when he goes in. So then he can't ever get out. You know, they're like, everyone's let out early. Well, he can't ever get let out early. And then he's told me, but I don't know if this is true, that you can't get Centrelink support or Job Seeker unless you have a fixed address. So there's this cycle. Is that true or not?
It's not true.
Okay.
You can receive Centrelink benefits if you do not have a fixed address, because you can use the support services like Launch Housing or youth projects and places like that, Salvation Army. You can use them as a mailing address, and a lot of people do.
Right.
However, the mutual obligation to receive those payments is astronomical. So it may be that he can receive the payments if he uses their address.
Yep.
However, what they require him to do is beyond his capabilities at that time.
Yeah.
The mutual obligation for New Start allowance is it's beyond what a lot of people, especially
definitely,
experiencing homelessness, can cope with. Homelessness is chaotic. No,
yes,
2 days are the same. You don't know what's going to happen to you tomorrow. You might lay awake all night worried that you're going to be assaulted. And then in the morning, Centrelink says you've got to be here at 8:30 for an appointment. How are you getting there to that appointment? You know, how embarrassed are you sitting on that tram when you haven't had a shower for 4 or 5
days?
And you know, and you're suffering from depression or PTSD or addiction, and you just—it's an impossible task.
Yes, it is.
Like with mutual obligation, for many people, it's an impossible task for them at that time.
Yeah.
And I think while people are navigating homelessness, that we really should have more stops in place for supports for people.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the barrier. So
what has it meant winning Victorian of the Year?
Yes.
What will that mean for your charity?
Well, what it has meant for us is that we finally have the voice that we deserved.
Yes.
We are the voice for the people who didn't have a voice, with a face for those who were never seen. And it means that hopefully people will finally understand what the National Homeless Collective does and how closely one-on-one we work with people. And what sets us apart from other groups is that we take people from the start to finish journey. We don't just help them with one thing. People don't make appointments with us. So if someone comes to us, for example, I got a call from an agency yesterday and she said, look, I've got this lady, she 52, she has nowhere to live, we're trying to get her bond and rent, but there's nothing available in with real estate agents who are going private, but none of the organizations are allowed to pay for private rent and bond. So that's where we step in with we've got a program called Sisters in Safe Housing for women to access timely rent and bond. It's loans, so they pay it back over a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But then we say, okay, does she have furniture? Is there anything in that house for her?
Yeah.
Does she have food? What are her hobbies? Would she like to, you know, does she like to do oil painting? We can get her some paints and an easel or something like that. Is she looking for work? We can help her find work. Does she have any other appointments? Are there any addictions? Is there any trauma? Does she need help to get to those appointments? Does she need someone to check in on her and make sure that she's okay and that she's getting to her appointments? And, you know, little things like, does she have a cheese grater in her house? No,
yes.
Well, let's buy her one, and a potato peeler, and let's make sure she's got everything for a kitchen and an iron. Does she need clothes? It's all of those things. What do I need to get up in the morning and go to work and function? Let's make sure that she has that as well. Or he, we look after men as well.
Yeah.
So the women that we employ at the Carla space, the idea is that they work with us for 6 to 12 months. We have no start or finish time. So, as I said before, homelessness is chaotic. I can't expect people to start at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
They might have had a really bad day or a bad night. And you know when you got to call your employer and say, hey, look, I'm sick, I can't come in. You're like, I hope I sound sick enough. I hope you can hear me. Even though, you know, you might have the plague, you still, feel like you've got to justify why you're sick or your child's sick. And it's embarrassing. And we put that onto people who are already vulnerable. and in that very precarious situation. So when I looked at what the barriers were to employment for people experiencing homelessness, I decided I would remove as many as I could. The first one that went was start and finish times. The second one that went was reasons why you're not at work. So I open the shop at 10. You get here when you can. You get here at midday, you get here at midday. You want to leave at 2, you leave at 2. You get paid for while you're here, while you work. The incentive is to come in longer because you're going to be paid for the hours that you work.
Yeah.
But if you need to leave at 2 o'clock, I don't need to know why.
No.
I don't need to know that you've got an appointment with your probation officer or with your alcohol and other drug counselor or with your anger management team or whatever.
Or visitation with your children or all sorts of things.
Exactly. Yeah. There are so many things that people to share, and they shouldn't have to.
No, they shouldn't have to.
You know, so we removed all those barriers and we're like, okay, so this is your job. This is what you, these are some of the duties. That's the other thing. These are some of the duties that you'll have in the shop. Is there anything you feel you won't cope with? And the first one most people say, I just can't serve people. I'm terrified of that till I just can't do it. Like, that's cool. That's fine. We'll teach you that. And now they basically push me out of the way. I've got this one. I'll serve this person. And yeah, they're super proud. And like in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of lockdown, one of our ladies got a job. She got herself a full-time job. Wow. She applied for it herself. She went to the interview herself. She'd been working with us since October last year.
Wow.
And she hadn't had any employment before this. She'd been in and out of homelessness and addiction and whatnot her entire life. And she came to work with us. We actually had another project called the Plate Up Project, which encourages people to reignite that passion of food and cooking. So when they do go into a house, they, you know, they're happy about cooking and looking after their nutritional needs. And she'd come to us then. And then when we opened the Carla space, she started to work with us then. And she, her entire, I've lost the word that I'm looking for, but self-confidence lifted. She felt useful. She felt that she actually had something to offer.
Yes.
And in the middle of a pandemic, we'd had to shut down, of course, because we were retail. And she just goes and applies for a job at some sort of warehousing. I don't want to say too much.
No.
Yep.
She applied for this job and she went to the interview herself and she got the job and they said, look, you'll be casual for about, you know, 3 or 4 months and then we'll put you on permanent. 1 week, and they've just said, oh, you're permanent. You're amazing. So
what a permanent
full-time work that she got. And
Donna.
Because we stayed with her for the journey. It wasn't just a case of like, okay, look, here's this cooking course.
Six-week program, out you go.
6 weeks, off you go. Yeah. And if you don't come for the first 3 days or if you miss a day, that's it, you're out and not letting you back, you know.
No,
it's holistic. So, it's perfect. Yeah,
it is. And it's acknowledging that there are barriers that other people just generally don't face.
No.
And
no.
Barriers we don't know about. Barriers we've never experienced.
No.
Things that we don't know about.
No, we don't.
But we're so
quick to judge.
Yes.
Oh, they're this. Oh, you know. People are that. You're like, whatever.
Oh, they need to do this. They just need to do that.
Oh,
yeah.
It drives me wild.
All behaviour has a fucking meaning.
Yep, it does.
Yep, it does.
From babies
what's the first thing
to adults.
People say about people experiencing homelessness, why don't they get a job? Why don't they just get a job? Like, oh, let me tell you the whys.
Yes.
Give me an hour and I'll tell you the whys. Yep. Why they can't get a job.
Yeah.
And understanding, like, I have not met a person yet who didn't have some kind of unaddressed trauma. That's where
it starts
from. It's unaddressed trauma.
Yes.
We know through studying addiction and studying behavior that, you know, we know with humans, we as a human, we need to be needed. That's part of our psyche. That's part of our makeup. If we're not needed, then we fall into a depression and, you know, life is very hard for us. So we have to have a skill. We need to be needed. Back in the clan days when we were all in tribes and whatnot, if you didn't have a purpose, you'd be ousted. You're bear food.
Yeah.
Like you're just holding us up. That's it. You got it, you know. Your skills are gone. That's it. You're bear food and we'll just keep moving on. And that's why scientists think that when you get older, you get nicer. So, like, you won't be kicked out. We've evolved to be nice when we're old so that we won't get kicked out.
I don't know about middle age and menopausal women. I don't think they're nicer.
I don't feel,
oh, God, no.
I feel like I'm coming to my rage.
I think they're strong and powerful and they're not putting up with shit anymore.
I feel like I'm coming to my rages.
Exactly. I'm in that boat as well. Yeah. And that again, is that's the whole give no fuck age.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, that's just like, I don't give a shit what you think about me, what you say about me.
No, and it's so beautiful.
And,
Yeah, it's a relief. So beautiful. And you younger women listening, you will get there.
Yeah, you'll get there. And if you can get there a couple of years earlier from listening to this, even better.
Even better.
Do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it now. Honestly, nobody, like everybody's worried about what everyone thinks of them, but nobody's actually thinking of
them. No, they're not.
That's just and you don't want people in your life that are. No. So it's a great way of weeding it out.
Fascinating. Yeah, we could talk to you for hours.
We could.
We probably better wrap it up.
We probably better not, because people will be like, how long is this podcast going for? Not that we ever care.
But what do you? What's your final message that we haven't asked you about? Or is there something you've missed that you would like the P world to know?
Oh, my goodness. I think I've spoken so much. I probably have said everything. But look, if I could give the charity a plug, please go to our website and Facebook page. And just support us. We need you. We can't do this without you. We're a charity for the people, by the people.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're a corporate or if you work, you know, for a group, we can do talks about homelessness. We call them homeless awareness sessions.
Yep.
So if you want to know more about homelessness, if you want to know more about how to support people, we can come into your workplace or go via Zoom because of COVID and do homeless awareness talks. There's a very small fee that goes to the charity, but you will learn a lot more about homelessness and how to support people, and we will myth bust, and it's a very safe place to ask questions as well.
Excellent.
And you just did a high school, did you? A secondary school, did you?
Yeah, I did two. I did one 2 days ago. I did one on Friday. I've got another one this Friday, and I've got a community group tomorrow.
And what I wanted to say, because some people say, where are the show notes? So when you click on the episode and you're listening, just scroll down or up, whichever way it goes, and it'll all be there. It's underneath the show.
We might do a little video of how to find it. And then
because
we'll
it's all there, and Akka spends ages typing them up, and everything will be in there magically, and just be able to click. It's links, hyperlinked. You just click on it and off you go.
Yeah. So we will be cheering you on the 25th of January. There's some remarkable people.
There are.
Go Victoria.
Yeah, come on.
Thank you.
I mean, we can't wait to see a photo of you with your shiny statue in a beautiful dress, because we got gypped from all of that.
Wow. Let's hope that, you know, I tell you what, I'm going to push that we still get our award tonight. We absolutely deserve it. We have
to have
it.
You really, really do. And every person listening is going to understand why you deserve it. So,
Mandy
and I did get our certificates in the mail.
We did.
So,
from the post office, because I wasn't home. So they had to take it back. So I had to go and get it. And I was like, oh, I think it's sort of like a big A4 thing. Anyway,
it's been so lovely talking to you. We will catch up in real life one day.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Keep doing amazing work, Donna. We love you.
Keep doing it.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. All right. Bye.
See you. Bye. Oh, how great's Donna?
Oh.
Can you see why we wanted her to win peas?
I know. She's awesome.
See, she is everything, the whole package. And I know that you're all going to support her, and I just hope the government does a nice ceremony for her, because she really deserves it. And Victoria's been through enough this year without having
The collective trauma, and then our Zoom was a disaster.
And all the other states have had beautiful nights with governors and premiers, and we didn't get anything.
She deserved that moment.
She did deserve that moment.
And get her.
Well, I wanted her to be on the front of the Age and Channel 7 and Channel 9.
I'm going to call out that it was disgusting that there was no
real media coverage
for her after that, and
other people had media, and I just think she needs the media.
She does.
Because she needs the money for the charity.
She does.
You know, we're not a very big media, but we'll give it to her.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So
what made you cry?
First of all, I'm going to say I didn't have a particularly cryy week. I know everyone was crying about Joe Biden winning.
it was a big week.
Yeah. But that I didn't cry about it. I had, you know, been to a Zoom funeral and other things, and I'd cried about things like that. But I wouldn't say that I had a particularly crying week.
Yeah, so, I was a bit flat.
Yeah.
I had a bit of a tear in my eye watching a young man called Chris Nikic, who was the first person with Down syndrome to finish an Ironman.
Oh, yes. Right? I watched that. Yep.
So my husband's done 4 Ironmans. This is Ironman triathlons.
Oh.
And I showed him and he was like, man, what time did he do? And so awesome. And we've been to Hawaii. Darren did the Hawaiian Ironman in 2002, I think.
Yep.
So they always pride themselves on including people of everybody. Difference.
Yep,
that's
okay,
right. Cool. So anyway, the thing that made me teary was his Instagram. I started following him and his mum was too sick to come to the race, so they just had this big cuddle together. And I just thought, I recognise that cuddle.
Yes.
You know? Oh, just one of my, he did it in 16 hours and 40. You have to do it by 17 hours.
Oh,
so he
gosh,
did it.
Oh, she did it.
Oh, so that was my moment.
Yep, yeah. Good. Okay. So my make a difference this week was on Sunday, I went out the front and there were 18 donuts. 18 donuts.
Amazing.
From Daniel's Donuts. If you don't live in Melbourne, I don't know if Daniel's Donuts, I know they're from New Zealand.
Oh, they're in Springvale.
They're, yes, but anyway, you can get them delivered all across Melbourne and they're so yummy. And I just thought, who are these from? There's no note. I'm asking everybody, nobody, nothing. You know, because I can't just text everyone I know and go, did you give me donuts? And then my beautiful friend Mandy, who listens to the podcast, who is the vet, she sent them because she was like, I just thought you've done so many amazing things this year. You've written a book, you've homeschooled, you've done the podcast, and you're just helping so many people. So I thought I'd send you some donuts.
So, thank you.
Yeah,
great
that
name.
Was my big difference. Yeah, great name.
Mine was, I just sort of, even yesterday, I had half a morning to myself.
Oh. Like, stop it.
I just haven't had any time to just pop into here and pop into there.
No. Well, we haven't been able to pop in.
We haven't.
And we've had children with us the whole time.
I just.
And now and then we're trying to save businesses. So it's good. I'm glad you've had a little bit of a moment.
I have just a bit. It wasn't even doing. I can't even tell you what I did, but I just felt elated that I could just
didn't
sort
have
of,
something, a huge list.
Yeah. Mm. And my work sort of calmed down this week, so I had a bit of breathing space.
Yeah, good.
So that's it. That's as boring as it is.
No, that's awesome. Make a difference. And my laugh this week is that the Who Gives a Crap toilet paper have a special Christmas range, which you can now order. I put it on our Instagram. I paid for it. This is not a sponsored post. And it's all alphabet, so you can make it say whatever you want. And
that's
the sound engineer
fun.
And I laid them all out on my bed and we were like making terrible words that you do not – Mandy's mum does not want to hear. But I have got them above my toilet that says shit, and it just makes me laugh.
Oh, so
and
clever. They're
I saw
clever.
Someone else did something like don't we on the floor or, you know, there's all
so
funny
good.
Things. So I can't tell you how much joy and how much laughter it's brought me. So if you need some really pathetic humour, then go
toilet
buy.
Humour, literally.
Literally toilet humour. Get the Who Gives a Crap. It helps other people.
Yes, it does.
And also you get – and then it was Sound Engineer's birthday, so I unwrapped one and I wrapped his present up in it. I've got initials and stuff on them.
Perfect.
Yeah, so there you go.
Perfect. I laughed this morning and it might sound a bit funny, so I don't want it to sound un-PC, but Molly was in the car and I said, oh, you got school tomorrow, and she said, I don't want to go, and I said, oh, why? And she said, because it's a minute silence because it's Remembrance Day.
It's
today.
Remembrance Day, which is a beautiful day in Australia. We celebrate the end of World War One.
So I don't want to offend anybody,
no.
She said, I have to go to school and I have to put poppies on the ground for 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
I think she
it's very
just,
hard to explain
it's very
the concept.
Hard to understand.
And of course they want it, you know, they want to
and
understand.
And she's
it.
In a public school, they celebrate these.
Yes,
things.
Of course. So my kids will have done that today
yes,
too.
Yes, but it was just funny the way she it was just like, I don't understand why I have to put poppies on the ground for 10 minutes. They must lay wreaths.
Yes.
That's what she means.
And I think our school last year, every child got an individual poppy
yes.
and they put them all along
so
this dry creek bread. It was beautiful.
So she was just, it did make me laugh. So I hope
know.
I haven't offended anyone.
No,
but I
no,
think
because
it was
we
more,
love Remembrance Day.
She just
Day.
Doesn't
just,
understand.
No, why am I doing this?
It's tricky. It's sort of very abstract.
And I think
isn't
it's those moments that catch you off guard and
yes.
you're like, whoa, this is funny. Like,
oh, you didn't want
now,
to go.
Now,
okay.
we'll explain it all, but yeah.
Yeah, so I have to put poppies on the ground for 10 minutes.
Anyway, we're rushing through because we know that we've given you, as normal, a ridiculously long episode, but Donna had so much to say and we wanted her to keep talking.
Thank
to be
you
honest.
For helping me get to 2,000 stars
yes.
on iTunes.
Yes.
Keep rating, reviewing.
I
read
think
them all the
that's
time.
Only in Australia.
Oh.
Yes, because
I think Kirsty and Amy told me there's an international
yes,
way we have to look at.
Because I love Shagged, Married, Annoyed, which is the funniest podcast out of England, also with Acast. And I went on theirs and they had like 450 reviews and I thought that's not right.
Oh, so they're Australian.
Because
reviews.
Then they were talking about all their 20,000 reviews or whatever. So we just see the ones from our country. So that's just 2,000 of you Aussie peas that have done it.
Well,
so
thank you.
There's probably more
them.
And we don't know where they are or how to find them.
Anyway,
but anyway.
Thank you. Remember there's some Christmas merch and also the Eat Sleep Therapy repeat bags are back in the store.
They're
so
back,
if you
people.
Want them, buy them for your therapist for Christmas.
Yes.
They're in there. Yes. Thank you to the supporters.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. We're getting close to telling you.
We're getting close to telling you. It's super close.
I know we hate vague booking, but we have to make sure. We're just dotting our I's and crossing our T's.
That's right, and that's really hard for me because I'm someone who just likes to get things done quickly.
It is hard for Mandy. By the time it comes out, she'll be like, I don't care about it
anymore. I move on from things really quickly. It's my impulsivity. I've got it, all right?
Okay. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
See you next week. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.